Hey, are you ready to create reliable revenue and master every detail of your hosting business? If you want to avoid compromising all those hospitality details that you love, but still approach hosting like the business it is, we created a free class just for you. Set aside 45 minutes. We promise it's worth your time. And go watch our value-packed workshop where we go over how to master every detail of your hosting business with our foolproof hosting business mastery method that will help you avoid hosting burnout. Growing, where simply starting your hosting business isn't always easy, but it can be simple. We'll help you avoid the three big mistakes that are keeping you stuck, tired, and overwhelmed as a short-term rental host so that you have a powerful revenue stream you can actually rely on.
If you're ready to take your hosting to the next level, head on over to thanksforvisiting.me/workshop to watch this on-demand training. Or send us a DM on Instagram with the word workshop. We'll send you the link and most likely a video DM. We love those. Again, that's thanksforvisiting.me/workshop.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every successful short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, this dynamic duo has welcomed more than 2,000 guests from 25 countries, earning them over $500,000 and garnering them over 650 five-star reviews. Now they're ready to share creative ways for your listing to stand out, to serve your guests and be profitable. Each episode will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry, or Annette and Sarah will share stories about their own experiences so you can implement actionable improvements to your own rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Here are your hosts, Annette and Sarah.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to a great week. My name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are
Thanks for visiting. We're going to kick off this episode like we do each and every week, and that is celebrating one of you and your amazing short-term rentals by using our hashtag, STR, Share Sunday. We're going to share you on Instagram, here in the podcast, our email, YouTube. So this is some free marketing, some free love there. Nettie, who are we sharing this week?
Today we are sharing at Far Out Cottage. Again, just like it sounds, at Far Out Cottage. And I just want to tell you, it is far out. But it's great. I want you to go to their Instagram and then go to their Airbnb listing. It is a cottage right outside of Portland, and she has kept so much of the original charm. There's, it was built in the 40s. I think the bathroom tile, it's pink, pink and mint green. So I think that is original. The kitchen, I think, was redecorated, but redecorated in the 50s, and she's kept that. Her furniture is from the 60s. She is just leaning in to the small cottage and the charm that was there originally, and just bringing, obviously it's fresh, but she's leaning into the vintage of the space. And I love that she's doing it, and she's very transparent that this is what she's leaning on here. She's not trying to dupe anybody. It's like, look, the stuff is from the 40s, it's from the 50s, it's from the 60s, and I want you to enjoy yourself and probably never really stay somewhere like this potentially again. So well done. The colors are very vibrant and amazing. So it's somewhere I think you just want to take the 20-minute drive from Portland and stay with her on the weekend. So take a look at her cottage. And these are the things too, listeners, if you buy that property and maybe there's a ton of charm and you want to keep it, you can keep it. And this is kind of a segue into our guest today, but don't always try to fight the history of the home and think you have to redo the space. Let's lean into how it was built originally, why it was built originally, and Far Out Cottage is definitely doing that. But Sarah, do you want to introduce our guest today and we can talk about how wonderful her space
is
also.
I had the absolute privilege about 2 years ago now to work with Airbnb on a concept they called How I Host. Mm-hmm. And they selected hosts from all over the country, the US, to kind of share their journey hosting in this YouTube series. And as each one dripped out, I was just falling in love with each one of the hosts that they shared. And one of them definitely stuck out to me. And I was like, Annette, we have to have them on the show. They've got such a fantastic story. They have such a great vision, and they have a very unique set up with their camp, Wanda Wega. So Teresa Surratt is a creative director in Chicago who rescued a century-old 25-acre summer camp that she renovated with her husband. It's a passion project where they host creative retreats, shoot, and also book to guests using Airbnb. So Teresa, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Just Teresa, we want you to get into like a 100-year-old camp. Is it in your family? Was it there for a for sale sign? How in the world do you fall into this camp and end up purchasing it? Take us back, because you've owned it for quite some time.
A long time. I wish it was in my family. Would have been a lot easier. Guys, I'm going to mess up the numbers. You would think I'd remember, but we're going back almost 18 years. It was it's a summer camp in Wisconsin that my husband went to when he was a kid growing up. And he went there as part of the Latvian community and part of the Catholic Church. And his mother was a refugee. So it was a place that the priests would allow people to stay out in families when they came to this country. And so he grew up going there. And it was a place that he remembered from his childhood and always told the priest, if the church ever wants to sell it, give me a call. He said that in his college days. And then fast forward to, you know, he's a grown up now and never forgot about it and brought me out when we were dating. And we got a phone call from the priest and said that the Catholic Church had decided to sell it. At that point, they wanted to build onto a monastery. And so they did. And they used the proceeds from us purchasing it to help build onto it. So that's how we came about it. It really wasn't being run as a summer camp per se in a traditional American sense. That's how we ended up using it, which is why we called it Camp Wanda Wega instead of just Hotel Wanda Wega or Inn Wanda Wega or what the Latvians called it, which was just Wanda Wega, because they didn't have a W. They had a V in their alphabet. So that's the short version of how it landed in our laps.
Okay, so listeners, you're going to have to go to their Instagram feed and just really, I mean, carve out some time, because you're going to get lost in the photos, and then all of the captions really tell the story. When you purchase the property, though, I'm going to say it's not as picturesque as it is now. What kind of state did you purchase it in? Was it being, you know, kept up, or did you have to put a ton of work into it?
Yeah. I always tell people you have to imagine like Blair Witch. It was the craziest rundown hoarding. And I'm saying hoarding, you guys, with a capital H. This is no joke. Okay. Imagine decades of piled up cars, of boarded up buildings, of a garage, the door wouldn't open. It was insane for many years, you guys, for almost the first 15 years. I didn't even show people the befores, because I said to my husband, people will never come here if they knew what it was. And it's funny, because it only had fallen into disrepair and in that condition the last, you know, decade before we purchased it. Before that, it was this lovely community that people went to and just fell into the wrong hands after a while. And so when we got it, it was really scary. Imagine, you know, roofs caving in, missing windows, raccoons living in rooms, next level. Not what most people would look at and say, I'd like to buy that and someday turn it into a rental. Right. Like the opposite. I was like, are you crazy? This is crazy.
I have a feeling after that closing day, they were all, you know, they were like, run from them. Like, we can't believe they just signed on the dotted line for this. So you bought it in this disrepair. You and your husband are creatives, though. I feel like you have a lot of creative background. Did you start to sit down and like make this grand vision for what it was going to turn into? Or did it just like piece by piece, building by building, start to create what it is today?
I mean, it's definitely the latter. I would love to take credit and say there was some, you know, because I'm a creative director, I should be able to claim that, right? That
right.
There was a vision and a plan and some strategy. There was none of that. It was nothing but youthful ignorance, honest to God.
I love that.
And it was that sometimes it's better to be ignorant and not even know what you're facing, because if you fully knew, you probably wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that most people rationally at 29 years old would say, I'm going to by 25 acres of abandoned buildings, you know, not just abandoned, but caving in buildings. It just isn't like a good business plan. There wasn't a business plan. So it was sentimental for him. And we're like, oh, we don't know. We've got time. We like to fix things up. So we'll just buy it. And I don't know, we'll just have our friends over and we'll have parties. At no time did we ever envision ever wanting to buy it to make a profit or to try to turn it into a business. So what happened is, because we're both preservationists and we both had purchased buildings over the years and fixed them up, and we have a real soft spot and a rational soft spot for old abandoned buildings, we just really wanted to save it. So that's what we did. And I learned how to, poorly, but learned how to drywall and sand floors. Everything except for the electrical and plumbing, you know, we did, because we were kids. Stupid young kids with, you know, we had time because we didn't have our own kids yet, you guys. And so it was a fun adventure. And it predates all of the HGTV shows and renovation shows, except for the original, the OGs like Bob Vila.
Yeah.
So we didn't have a Pinterest. Pinterest wasn't a thing, you guys. This predates Instagram, Facebook. There were no podcasts.
Right.
We didn't know what the hell we were doing. We were just like, I don't know, we'll have big parties and it'll be fun. So eventually that evolved, because after we started to fix it up, we started to invite our artist friends out, and then we had artist retreats and artist residencies and artist camps. And then people find out, and then, you know, Martha Stewart calls, and then you're like, oh shit, now we're a business and we better get it on Airbnb. So that's what we did.
How was that trend? Because I was going to ask you next is, what was because I'm sure we have listeners out there who are like, wait, this speaks to me. Like, this thing fell into my lap and we're partying there now, but I feel like people want to pay to stay here, or they want to share this with people. So what was that like, the iteration of just having it for you and your friends and family to putting it on an online travel agency like Airbnb? Was it just like, let's just throw some spaghetti on the wall, see how it goes? Or was it more careful? Talk us through that.
Yeah. These are great questions, you guys. Again, I go back to like, don't give us any credit for having a plan or strategy. There was no model for it. Now, remember back in the days, and y'all are from, you know, hospitality. And I wasn't, we weren't. And so we were like, how do you even do this? Airbnb was a new thing. We barely knew what it was. And our biggest fear, and the reason that we resisted for so long, is that we don't want to disappoint people. We had only ever used camp to give away to friends, family, charity groups. We'd never taken money for it. We didn't feel like it was worthy of taking money for it. It wasn't fixed up. It wasn't as pretty as all these fancy places you saw that people rented, and they promised soft sheets and, you know, all the luxuries, and they wrote about it in such a poetic way. We're like, oh, hell no, we're not going to do that. What if people don't like it? What if it's not good enough? So for many, many years, that stuck with us. What if it's not good enough? Until finally we said, well, we'll just rent out the 3-bedroom cabin one time, see what happens. You guys, the very first time we rented out the 3-bedroom cabin, keep in mind, this is just one building on the property, we got a 4-page written note from this woman who stayed there about all of the things that we could do differently and better.
Oh no.
And this is the deal. We asked for it. We solicited it. We're like, hey, we've never done this before. Can you tell us what you thought of it? And she did. Everything down to, you guys need to plant more hydrangea bushes.
Oh, wow.
And you need to install, you know, those dispensers they have in parks where it dispenses doggy bags for like poop. Okay. She wanted those everywhere. Anyway, it was the greatest gift I could have ever gotten, because I took her really seriously. And so what we did at that moment, and this changed everything for us, is that I realized that everyone's going to have a different opinion. And no matter what, you're going to disappoint people. And so I know that sounds like defeatist, but it's really not. It's really freeing. Because what we did is I created the manifesto of low expectations from that moment. And that manifesto explains that it literally, the top of it says, for many, this is going to be, you know, a new definition of hell. You don't have locks on your doors. Most of you won't have air conditioning. You barely have heat. Nothing's been updated since the Hoover administration. We get everything from thrift stores. You'd be crazy to go here. There's lots of great hotels all around. We'll give you the names. And that was us being not campy, but really vulnerable and really honest and really transparent. Because again, it goes back to the reason that we never rented is we didn't want to disappoint people. We wanted people to enjoy it the way that we did. And that meant at that time, and even now, that it's real rustic. And we actually put the definition of rustic on our manifesto of expectations for those who don't know what it is. Anyway, since then, knock on wood, I have to find some wood around me right now. I don't know how we ended up on Travel and Leisure's greatest hotels in the world, or Condé Nast shortlist, or the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, because to this day, we still hold that manifesto up really high. And we, when people go to Airbnb, you can read our listing. We start out with all the things that, you know, aren't going to be up to snuff when compared to other places. And I think that that, I know that you didn't ask for this part of it as long-winded, but if I ever had to give someone a piece of advice, it would be don't oversell. I think it's better to set expectations in a way that fits you're comfortable with and over-deliver. Just over-deliver, whatever that is. So if you have 400 thread count sheets, just say you have less and they'll be happy.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Our version of that is indoor plumbing. Basically, people think they're going to poop like a bear in the woods when they come out. And when they find they have a blushing toilet, they're just so happy. They're grateful and they're the best guests. They're just like, this is better than I thought.
Do you by chance still have this 4-page letter? Or did you burn it at campfire?
I don't know. I think I did a blog post on it once and it said, I titled it, oh, I'll find it. I'm sure you can Google it and find it. It was something like the worst review ever, something like that. Or the best review, the worst review that's the best review ever. Mm-hmm. And I broke it down, you know, because it was just really enlightening. It was a good learning experience for us. Part of me was like, either we're never going to rent again, or I'm going to rent more than ever. And it was a fork in the road, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that what people underestimate is everyone's rooting for you. They want to have a good experience. You do too. People come in with the best, you know, headspace and mindset because they've taken vacation time to spend time with you. They want it to be successful. You all have the same objective. Mm-hmm. I think honesty is the best thing you could do. And then also we treat everybody like family. You show up, our dog's going to lick you to death. We're going to give you a beer. We're just going to hang out. You know, we live there too. It's like a traditional bed and breakfast in that we stay on site when we're there. So anything people need, they just come knock on the door. And more times than not, we end up having coffee with complete strangers in the morning that leave as friends and we see them again the next year. So maybe that's a little different than most, what we call them earlier, the short-term rentals. I'm not used to that word. STR.
Yes.
Well,
sure.
Actually, I think this is a great, because so when Teresa hopped on the call today, you know, we chatted a little bit about her manifesto, you know, about Camp Wandawega's manifesto and the, what is it that the low expectations?
The manifesto of low expectations.
Low expectations. But honestly, but I think at the end of the day, you are taking something that was near and dear to your heart and your husband's upbringing, right? And you put what mattered to you into the property. And then you're sharing it how you wanted to share. And I love how you took that 4-page review and you took from it what you needed and made it your own. And so I want our listeners to know, like, Annette and I, we talked about this yesterday, like, right, the hosts out there there are hosts who don't provide sheets in their bed on the Jersey Shore. And there's hosts that have shampoo and conditioner. And Thanks for Visiting is here to give you some ideas, right? To create your own brand standards for what's right for you and your heart and your business and whatever is good for your goals in this industry. And just making sure that your guests are safe, I think is the only thing that, you know, we aren't going to like lean away from. But I think that's why you've had so much success. I mean, people want to be a part of this unique thing that is so ingrained into who you are as a couple and in the history of it. And you've just did a great job of, like you said, preserving it. And what I want to get into next, Teresa, is so you're a creative director. What is the difference? Because you've done this so beautifully and it's like a wonder looking at your Instagram and at the website for the camp. But what is the difference between building a brand and then doing advertising? You know what I mean? Like, how do you differentiate that to really capture the essence, not oversell, but still ring true to what you want to share with the world?
It's funny. I mean, there's so many different explanations for that and different ways to apply it to different types of businesses. But I'm only going to speak from the branding side of my head from being a GCD and an ad world for so many years, is that anyone can do an ad. And an ad is when you're talking at someone and saying, you should buy this thing, this on sale now, reduced rates now, you know, limited, I've got it, you know, pushing sales versus creating a space and an environment that people come to you. And they come to you if you build a brand because you have, whether it's a motto, a philosophy, something that gives them an emotional attachment to an experience that you can provide. And when you do that, you do it successfully, That's when you book out a year in advance and you don't have to say, hey, I've got an opening, because people already know, because they're stalking your feed, because they're looking for that opening. So I think that if more people would start with the what they want the foundation of their brand to be, and that could be a home. I mean, look at the Beekman Boys, and there's a million other examples where they started with a physical space that had a story. They shared that story. They share a part of themselves that takes off. And if people subscribe to that and connect that emotionally, then you've already got a brand, and that's far more valuable than any piece of advertising. You can buy double page spreads and, you know, every big home magazine every month, and it won't buy you a brand.
Mm-hmm. What has worked for Camp Wandawega in terms of building that brand? Like, how have you found the best way to take what you know to be beautiful and unique, right, from all the stories your husband's told you growing up, and then put that on a website? Like, how do you, is there any best practices you have for someone who maybe doesn't have a creative directing background of how to translate what was important to you guys to share with the world on a photo or in copy, you know, the words that we use to describe the space? Is there any, do you have any tips or tricks for our listeners?
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost like our website's the worst possible example because it's so outdated right now. And it's like, what do they say about like the cobbler's, you know, children don't have shoes. That's definitely our case. I am lucky to update that website every blue moon because the landscape has changed. People go to, you know, they used to go to your Facebook, then they go to Instagram, then they go to your stories. Now they go to your reels. Now they go to your TikTok. Mm-hmm. Everything is outdated as soon as you get on top of it. So the way that we tell our story changes, you know, and it's probably not through our website in best practices. But what I would say for folks that don't come from an advertising background per se, or maybe they're not a copywriter or a photographer, is enlist the help of those who are. So let's just take the visual story is your key story. So if you're on the bus and you're looking at something, you don't have the audio running, whatever communications you have, it doesn't matter if it's a post or it's a reel, it's got to speak to you through pictures first. I mean, obviously, we're very visceral people. The way that we experience the space is through our eyes. So you don't even need to be a copywriter to do this, but you have to have a good eye. And if you don't, then, you know, how do you get content creators to come out? Or how do you get, you know, free stays and trade for those who do film or those who have a really beautiful eye for moments, and then have them shoot some stuff in a barter and then use that? And then I would say, you know, for the copy listings for your description, just be honest. I know I sound like a broken record here, but don't try to shill it. Mm-hmm. Just be honest, be straight. Give them ideas of the types of things that you would do in the perfect 24 hours, 48 hours, 3 days, whatever it is that you're marketing your space for, and help them immerse themselves. Like, I woke up at 8 a.m. to birds, or in our case, it's a bugle song. And then you went to the canteen, you got coffee. You know, in this case, you might go to the Keurig, which is in the kitchen. Spell out the story of what the day in the life is going to be and say it in the most colloquial way. Mm. Conversational way. I think many folks think that they have to be like advertising experts or write things in like whatever they believe in their mind is the perfect advertising format. And I actually don't subscribe to it. I really don't. I think people just, they want to experience things firsthand. They want to be talked to in a really honest way. And that's the best advice I can give. So don't sweat it if you're not a copywriter or an ad person. It's okay.
Love that. Can you give us some visibility on like the peak season? I would think is summertime for you. On a weekend, like how many people are you hosting normally at one time? It's just kind of overwhelming. We were talking a little bit before the show and you were giving me some numbers and I'm like, holy smokes, that's a decent amount of people. So walk us through what like the weekends or the weeks look like during the summer and the amount of people that are coming through the camp.
Well, we've got we're really more three seasons. I mean, okay. We're open all year, but our high season is definitely late spring, summer into fall.
Okay.
Especially in Wisconsin, the falls are probably as popular as the summers. Now we're structured pretty differently than a lot of the, short-term rentals, like ICS, maybe some of your listeners, in that we only rent to groups. Our business license goes back to 1925 as a hotel and motel, boarding, rooming house. And then we got an Airbnb license just for the infrastructure of using the rental logistics for it and the coverage that you get from it. But we rent to groups only. That's our license. So we can only rent. The smallest group is six. And the largest events, and that's for one cabin, the largest event groups that we have are weddings. And they're like 160 people for not to stay at site. So on site, we can sleep up to 65, 70. depending on how people use every space. But an average weekend, it's so funny because it's different every week and every weekend, because you might have a bachelorette party going on with a graduation party going on with, like, here's a little company retreat, you know, to a bunch of girlfriends getting together, to a family. It's always a crazy mix, you guys. There's multiple groups. Imagine having a cluster of Airbnb houses all in one compound. Yeah. And each one of those houses has a radically different group. What I love the most is the most ethnically and culturally diverse groups, age, race, everything you can imagine. That's the part that we want to encourage the most and embrace the most, is how do you bring together groups of people to where they have their own socially distant spaces, but they overlap at the beach or at the bonfire or in some of our common spaces like the treehouse. And otherwise, we'd never have gotten to meet each other. Mm-hmm. We're not a one type sort of resort, I guess you'd say, or camp.
No, that's great. Let's, you just kind of touched on it, because I'm very familiar with your common spaces because of Instagram. Can you tell our listeners about those amazing common spaces that you have created for your guests?
They're so good.
Oh, thank you guys. That's my OCD. That's my little designer OCD.
Yeah, that's great though.
Side hustle. Well, I mean, there's a bunch, and it ranges. Like when you first come in, the tiniest version is our little free library, which is a recreation of a 100-year-old, the first cabin built in Camp Onduaga, which is free for everyone, but stick by stick, twig by twig, a reproduction of the cabin that was first moved near the property that was torn down. I wish we'd have saved it. Then you've got the welcome cabin, which is just where everyone first checks in and they get their clipboards. They meet their camp counselor. They learn about the programming. They've got, you know, the 1930s brochure rack where they can learn about excursions and things they can do there. And then of course you've got the main lodge, which is, you know, again, turn of the century, which was a speakeasy during Prohibition. And it was the Rathskeller is where we have our camp store. And we've got the canteen, which is about 100 years old, but we just resurrected it and rebuilt it, which serves coffee. And, you know, every old school brand from the 20s to the 60s you can find in there. And then we've got the treehouse, of course, which is a three-story treehouse, which has a library in it and a hangout space and a dining room. And I mean, you guys, I can keep going. There's so many buildings. We've got the mess hall, and we've got the canteen bar, and then we've got the beach, and then we've got the nature stand. We've got a craft cabin. It's a compound. It really is. And what we want to do is offer more amenities to more guests. And so what we're trying to do is convert more of the spaces that are unused into amenity spaces. So I've got two really exciting ones that are coming this year that I haven't even announced yet.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll have to stay. You can share them with us if you want. We feel very privileged. But if not, we'll tell everybody to go to the Instagram so they can be abreast of the situation when these new amenities launch.
I'm going to give you a hint.
Okay.
One of them ties back to the Prohibition era roots of gambling.
Oh.
And nothing illegal, I have to say, for zoning, whoever might eventually
listen
to that.
Yes, listen.
Totally legal and totally safe, but it ties back to the heritage of the place. Mm. And then the other one is something that was born from what we... Actually, I'm going to tell you about the other one because that one is almost done. So many groups come to camp and they come in wardrobe. They bring costumes. They bring wardrobe changes.
Oh, okay.
They come making their own t-shirts. They come like it's a 70s camp or it's a Moonrise Kingdom camp, or if it's like Gay Pride, like every boy and their, you know, dog is wearing a wig, you know? So we decided to embrace that and make a Onduaga wardrobe department, where we have a prop closet that has been full for decades of every possible era-specific costume you can imagine, from Wes Anderson meets Camp Crystal Lake and everything in between. So we're actually inventorying all that and going to make it open to where guests can just come in and dress up like a bear or a Boy Scout and go do their own photo shoots.
So that's...
This is very fun.
Yeah. That's amazing. 25 acres, and we're going to get into how you do all of this while having a whole-on full-time job. But I think I know what you're going to say, but do you wait till everything's perfect to launch, Teresa, or with these different moments within the camp, or you've done these in phases too. So talk to us about just getting things out to the public, to your guests, and what phase they're in when you let them experience them.
That's the best question. And it's also a trick question because the answer is yes and no.
Okay.
First, there's no such thing as perfect, obviously. For us, It's about embracing the imperfect. But the truth is, if I'm being honest, I'm so OCD, it has to be our definition of perfect before I'll open that door. So it like, I'm such a maniacal control freak. If like the front doors aren't lettered and hand painted by a sign painter in the right Pantone color, those doors won't open. It won't even matter if everything else is set. It has to be. And it's like, we've learned though, because people do film and photograph every corner, mm-hmm. it's way better to just wait till it's ready and then, you know, open the doors and share it than it is to open something when it's half built or a work in progress, mm-hmm. because your first impressions are everything, you know? So it's like a yes and.
For sure.
Answer, I know.
And you just kind of alluded to this, that, you know, your guests are going to photograph and just kind of document everything. And you spoke about it in the beginning with the Condé Nast and the Wall Street Journal and Martha Stewart. When did those like commercial inquiries, when did those start coming to you for camp? And talk us through like the notoriety of the camp. Was it like a windfall because one person posted about it? How is that like transferred over time from maybe print magazines into now social media?
Well, I mean, I think everything is gradual. It took us 18 years to be, you know, I wouldn't say overnight success. We're anything but an overnight success, but some people might look at it from a distance and say that's really successful by a different definition. I think we as owners can only see the things that are broken and things we want to be, you know, and that we're not yet, mm-hmm. but we're happy with it as a passion project. And we try to keep that in check. We're not trying to be the best at anything. We always feel really honored and humbled when we're included in anything from the local newspaper to that, you know, being included in a Wall Street Journal article. It doesn't matter, you know, because every time something comes out, we're surprised and we always assume that it's going to be the last one. Mm-hmm. And I think if you go in with the mindfulness, with the mindset of being grateful, and it forces you to be an innovator and keep thinking about what's next, because it forces you to not rest on your laurels or whatever your last headline was. Mm-hmm. And you just have to go out and be humble again. And I think there's no straight line to getting press. I think we don't actively go out and pitch. We're, knock on wood again, looking to, we just make things that we love and we share them on social. And then when people see it, if they like it, sometimes we get phone calls from press and then they'll, you know, they're doing a roundup and, you know, five cool places to visit in Wisconsin, whatever it might be. And then sometimes we get included. And I think that the very first thing that we did was when I got a, let me see, Country Living Magazine did a story when we built, we brought the log cabin. I moved this little log cabin from my hometown in the back of a flatbed pickup truck, 350 miles, fixed it up as a 1920s cottage and did a little story on it, Country Living. And then the editor-in-chief called me. I was on production in Prague because, again, my day job, but I'm still out. I was on production. It's 3:00 in the morning. She calls me and says, I pitched this, the editor, the head editor of Hearst Publications and Books called Sterling, and we want to make it into a book. So come to New York. We're going to publish this. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not a writer. Panic, full panic. I don't know how to do that. This isn't enough. It's just a tiny 10-by-10 square foot cottage. How do you turn that into a book? And a year later, it was a book. And then that led to my second book with Random House. And then my third book with Penguin. And then that little story turned into, the next one turned into the motivation and the inspiration to do a treehouse. And then I made another cabin, which is now the Sterlingworth, and another cabin that's now the Craft Cabin. And, you know, I can't count anymore how many old abandoned buildings we found, moved, renovated, and turned into amenity spaces for guests. But what happens is, it's a virtuous cycle. You're creating spaces for the reasons that you love. You go into it with no intentions of it being a moneymaker or a place that you rent, and you do it for the love of it. And in my case, just love of history and restoring with my husband. Then sometimes karmically, it comes around and people also, you find your crowd, you find your kinfolk, they like those things too. And then they share it. And then when people share with each other, that's when you get phone calls from other magazines and press begets press. And then quite organically, you might get a phone call from the London Guardian and they do a story because they, you know, read about it in Travel and Leisure, whatever it might be. But I think that if we had to distill it down for people getting into it and they're wondering how they get press, is the best advice I have is try to do things that you don't see other places. Don't go to Pinterest first for your inspiration. go into history, travel to other countries, dive into the root cellar or the attic of the place that you're at if it's historic. But if you only try to emulate what others are or whatever is trendy, that's not, and I say this with love and respect because I wish some people would have told me the same, it's not newsworthy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, because there's too many of them out there that are redundant. And so I would say, if you really want it, do something that's infinitely harder and more expensive to move buildings hundreds of miles in flatbed trucks and spend a year fixing it up. But sometimes they'll turn into books that will turn into short stories that turn into a toy line that will turn into, you know, a business. So don't be afraid of the extra effort early on.
You talk about the benefits of putting passion in front of profit. Annette and I often talk about people before profit. You know, we want our listeners to have, of course, profitable businesses, and money's not a bad thing and all that kind of good stuff. But if you put the people first, those that we come and we share spaces with, money will follow, opportunities will follow, right? Like, I think that's kind of what you're saying. You mentioned, though, the, you know, shining a spotlight on your competitors, and with Camp Onewega being so unique, I wouldn't even think that you would have to ever worry about that or have that be on your mind. But can you talk about that and the importance of doing that?
You know, it's funny. I don't even like the word competition.
Right.
Because when I bought Camp 18 years ago, you guys, it was unheard of for someone to buy an abandoned summer camp. You know, it just didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And now you can't, you know, throw a stick and not hit another summer camp that's been bought by some 20 or 30 somethings that have want to turn it into the next, I don't know, Ace Hotel and insert state name here. Uh-huh. There's just thousands of them because there's a model for it now. Right. And I think that back when we did it, it was novel. And I think now the idea of buying roadside motels or drive-ins or barns or, you know, all of the things that people do now, it's especially post-COVID, there's an influx of people doing it, and we encourage it because for many, it's their dream and it's mm-hmm. they envision it as their job and their livelihood and their future and their passion. And so we try to encourage that. And so we, on a pretty regular basis, will spotlight different places that we found that are sort of what we call unsung heroes. I like to find the little places that don't advertise, the places that aren't out there trying to shill who they are and doing selfies of themselves every 5 minutes, but the ones that are working real hard to do something that's really personal, really beautiful, whether it's restoring some place or preserving a place, and that they're off the beaten path. And so those are the ones we look for. And when we find them, and it could be like a resort that's owned for three generations, that's just taking a nosedive because the owners are too elderly and I'm hoping to help find a buyer for it. Mm-hmm. Or it could be a place that there's been one really obsessive designer who's been restoring, you know, an artist home from the 40s that he just doesn't know how to advertise or is too humble to. People just don't know about, and they deserve a spotlight. And I think that's one of the most rewarding things is finding these Airbnbs and small inns that have unique stories and helping them. Point. We have, you know, our followers are not big. We only have 73,000. And now with this lovely new algorithm, like 0.5% even see our posts. But when we can get any sort of loudspeaker, we do try to point them in that direction so that everyone can save more places. If more of us were looking to find historic insert space here, whether it's an inn or a barn or a hotel or a camp or a lodge, instead of demolishing them and building new, then the world would be a better place because we'd be appreciating and embracing what it means to understand and really experience nostalgia. And I think that there's so much power in that disconnection, getting out in the woods, stepping into another era. One of our mottos is that nothing crosses the threshold if it's newer than 1960. So when you come to camp in the majority of our buildings, they're a time travel trip because it makes you experience everything differently, whether it's the coffee maker that's a percolator from the 50s or the tennis racket that's, you know, from the 60s. It's different. So we try not to be fancy. We try to make everything a story and an experience.
That was heavy. Like everyone, we're taking deep breaths right now because we're, you know, looking at ourselves in the mirror, like how can we help that? And listeners, this is the thing too, if you're planning your summer trips, seek something like that out. Because even if it's a one night stay or you're driving through a town or something, it does make a difference to the proprietor. It makes a difference to the town too, because you're probably going to have a coffee somewhere or go to a, you know, either, whether it's even filling up your car, it does make a difference. But we know that you cannot do this alone. So can you talk to us about your team? What, you know, kind of maybe your role and your husband's role, and then how many people do you employ on the camp to help you to maintain what you work on every on a day-to-day basis, since this isn't your full-time
job? Yeah, well, for sure. For the first decade, it was just David and I.
Okay.
We had a neighbor that mowed the grass, and their local plumber, you know, when things broke, you know, you're generalists.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But no staff. And then we had, you know, 5 years later, we would get someone who would help run. We had a wedding, someone that would come pitch in. We've always had a cleaning lady when we started to rent. One lady still does it by herself. We try to book fewer rentals, and we don't do back-to-backs to give time to do proper maintenance, care, and flipping. And then now that we're grown up, we have a new camp director, husband and wife team. And then we've got, you know, two part-time neighbors that help us out with projects. And then we have a stable of locals, just like everybody who owns an Airbnb. You've got a guy you call flip electrical and plumbing, and, you know, your mechanic. And so we do bring in some summer help, and then they will help for events. And then for special projects, we have a small Rolodex of builders and different people we work with. But because we're not a proper hotel, we don't have like a big full-time staff. We are still a real mom and pop. And David and I still go there every single weekend, and we're working during COVID. We were there for a year and a half. So now, I guess, to answer your question about how we divide it up, I do marketing, advertising, our branding, our partnerships, deal with our content creators, influencers, all of that, and special events. And then David is the business side and contracts, and he deals with more the logistics. And when we're, you know, moving buildings, acquiring a new building, expanding the property, buying a house next door, that type of thing. And then we've got staff that will help, you know, with the contracts, with events, and then run the camp store and make the coffee in the mornings and that type of thing. So it is a team, and I'm really minimizing the team. I haven't gone through all that the team does at camp, and they do it a ton more. They're really what makes it possible. But the list is just too long. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's really different though than a traditional Airbnb. There's not like a code that you just show up and then it's self-explanatory at all.
Right.
We try to make it DIY, but the truth is there's still quite a bit that they have to do to help make the guest experience a memorable one and have them want to come back.
Talk to us about, you know, we talked a little bit before we hit the record button, you know, for you and your mission with the camp and why it matters to you, you have a give back. You share it with, is it with community members? Talk to us about that, the pay to stay, and also like what really matters to you and your husband with the camp and who you share it with.
I'm so glad you asked that. I wish everyone did. The older I get, the more I appreciate what matters most is what you give back. It's not what you take. It's not what you are able to make, whether that, you know, is the paycheck you take home and the job title you have, but our legacies are what we do for other people. And I think that we're trying every day to find as many ways as we can to try to find more opportunities to do that. So we have done and are doing this year art camp, which is, you know, free to artists, and they just come and then they just make art. And we do a camp for inner city kids, which are kids that come from really challenging backgrounds, single parent or parents incarcerated, and have never been to a summer camp. And we just close the whole camp down. We close all of our rentals, and we do that. We're planning an LGBTQ camp, which is just for queer families that have children and want to donate for that. We're working now with another group of persons of color to be able to promote the art specifically. We actively look for organizations and groups that we can donate it to, because I feel like those are the things that people, it sounds weird to say, and maybe nostalgic, but it is about charity. And that's why I have a day job, you guys. I can't afford to do this. I have a day job that I literally will go to and say, if I work for another year, it will allow me to donate camp to another group or another five groups or three groups or whatever it is. So there's this trade-off, and I welcome it. And And so of course we have mass in the grass. We've had it since 1961. We allow on average 250 churchgoers to come to our outdoor, you know, church. We don't run it, of course. We're not a church, but we donate it to the local parish, and then they come out with their priest, and then they give the ceremony for mass for all of the local neighbors, you know, that have summer cabins and live in the area. They've been doing it forever. So we just let them continue to use it. We don't run it for them. And then they take the donations back to their own parish. So we had to close that for COVID, but we're opening that back up. We're excited about that. And that's the beginning. What we love to do is give away group vacations to, whether it's our daughter's school, Montessori school, or it could be local firefighters, or there's a million ways to give back. And I think that if we could find a way for a camp to make just enough money that it pays for itself to be able to continue to donate it more, that's the mission. That's what we really want to do. And that, and find ways to continue to restore it back to its 1920s really blue collar, humble glory. Those are our two biggest missions. And so everything that we share and everything that we do is alongside this. That's why you're not going to see modern neon things in our camp store, and you're not going to see fancy pastries in our canteen. You're going to find, you know, Twinkies and mediocre coffee. And it's crazy that we charge 5-star prices for this and people still pay for it, knock on wood again. But I think that people, it's the summer camp in general is the democratization of society. It's like everyone's on the same playing field. Everyone has a shared interest in sharing that bonfire together and hanging out in the craft cabin together and drinking a PBR when they show up and trying to just, check our own egos, let's say, and everyone stays in the same cabins that don't have locking doors and no air conditioning. Mm. So it's been fun for us. And I think, I don't know if they answer your question, but I mean, it's definitely something that we want to continue to do and find more ways to do. I feel like that's what gives any space longevity. And I feel like Camp Wendewege being around for 100 years has helped us. You know, that's one of the things that's helped this place. Continue.
Listeners, if you're like Sarah and I right now, obviously we've been wanting to have them, you know, Camp Wendewege on the show since we saw their Airbnb spot years ago. So it's really a privilege to have you on, Teresa. But listeners, this is the thing, is like, be authentic. Be whatever yourself. That space is, like, let that authenticity show. I think that this has been proven on this episode, and that the money will follow that. And it doesn't just have to be about the money. It's also just like that elevated reciprocity Sarah and I talk about all the time, of like knowing that your guests are there enjoying the space that you've prepared for them, whatever reason brings them to your space. But I think our listeners hopefully are taking tons of notes and super inspired after this episode. We want you guys, please follow Teresa, follow the camp, and, you know, DM her if this episode resonated with her. I'm sure she'd love to have, a message.
What
about
is the best
that?
Way for listeners to engage with Camp Wendewege? What do you prefer?
Yeah, I mean, if you DM us, is great. I'm on Instagram for sure. And then you could, it's me that will reply. If you want to send an email specifically about, you know, I manage partnerships and, you know, content creators, things like that. That's just Teresa at Wendewege. But if it's for an event or any sort of a rental, you just go to Ashley at Wendewege. But yeah, DM is the fastest. If you just want to drop a note and say, hey, that's definitely me, I'm going to answer you at 3:00 in the morning Central Standard, which is the only window of freedom that I get before I get my day job.
Oh, jeez.
Well, thank you for everything you're doing in your area and for creative hospitality hosts across the world. It really is infectious. And what you're doing is inspirational. And we are grateful for your time today, Teresa.
I am grateful to have this conversation with you too. Thank you for inviting me, and it's been really fun. Thank you guys.
Thank you. I am Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are
Thanks for visiting. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for this episode at thanksforvisiting.me. If you're looking to take your listing to the next level and show your guests how much you care, be sure to check out our line of thoughtful hosting products. From hosting checklists to custom mugs to toilet paper stickers, we've got you covered. And if you love our show, remember, sharing is caring. Please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week. Thanks for visiting.
Ever wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us, it's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.